You're listening to Vanessa and Gallant on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Vanessa Richardson and Paul Gallant.
To have this long of a run of great pitching is just... Every organization around the league is probably looking at the Astros in envy because of the pitching staff. And they throw a lot of innings. I mean, they're the best.
That was Jeff Blum on the Astros' call in last night's 5-0 win over the Tampa Bay Rays. Which did get a little dicey in the ninth inning, but for the most part, complete domination. Started off with Jose Altuve and Jeremy Pena helping chase Shane McClanahan from the game after just 4 innings of work. After he walked Altuve in the 5th inning, he got pulled from the game. It was a very impressive victory because they were able to attack McClanahan the way that they were, but also because the pitching just continues to be absolutely fantastic. Christian Javier gets his 10th win of the season. And hearing Blum on that broadcast and seeing the many really impressive graphics about Astros pitching this season over the course of last night's broadcast was really something. I mean, I was consistently picking up my phone and taking screenshots of some of the stuff that AT&T Sportsnet Southwest was putting out there. For example, the Astros have 2 of the American League's 4 Cy Young contenders. They have Justin Verlander. They have Framber Valdez. The other guy, Shane McClanahan, who the Astros took out last night and probably lowered his standing along those lines. Definitely Verlander got to be the front runner right now, especially if he's healthy. Just giving you a couple more starts down the stretch to, I think, lock it in. And Dylan Cease, the guy from the Chicago White Sox. The Astros have 5 pitchers now with 10-plus victories. Justin Verlander has 17. Framber Valdez, who has 16. Jose Urquidy with 13. Luis Garcia with 13. And now Christian Javier with last night's victory, 10. They've done this 7 times over the course of their history, which I found to be fairly impressive. They've been doing it fairly recently. I think 2017 was the last year that they had that. Let me take a look. Okay, I'm just going through all these graphics that I was taking pictures of in the game because they kept on posting stuff. I was like, whoa, how are the Astros this good at pitching? I know it's good. I did not know it's great. Last time it happened was 2018 with Justin Verlander, Gerrit Cole, Charlie Morton, Dallas Keuchel, and Lance McCullers. Before that, Roy Oswalt, Andy Pettit, Roger Clemens, Brandon Back, and Wandy Rodriguez at the time. That would be really turning back the clock. Honestly, I don't know off the top of my head. Your boy wasn't here. Sean Mabe shaking your head. Yeah, you have an answer?
Wandy Rodriguez wasn't a teammate of Roger Clemens.
Okay, good. Thank you for confirming that. It was Ivan Rodriguez.
Brandon Backey.
Alex Rodriguez.
No.
Horacio Rodriguez. Alfonso Rodriguez. We're just going to move on entirely. Hey, other impressive things that the Astros have done. Entering last night, first in innings pitched, first in strikeouts, first in ERA, first in walks, hits per innings pitched, first in opponent batting average, first in opponent OPS. And every pitcher for the Astros this year outside of Ronel Blanco and Pedro Baez have had an ERA under 4. That means 99.3% of their innings have been from sub-4 ERA pitchers. The last team with a higher percentage than this, the 1979 Baltimore Orioles. Holy crap. So today's question is, what is the Astros' weakest link? It's clearly not the pitching. But as you get to the roster cutdown point where you go from 28 players to 26 with just 13, who's going to get the axe? Who's going to get fired? You're fired. Who's going to be the weakest link? You are the weakest link. Goodbye. I like my edition better than Donald Trump and random British broads version. Anyway, here are the guys that are obviously staying in for the playoffs. Justin Verlander, Framber Valdez, Lance McCullers, Christian Javier, Jose Urquidy, Luis Garcia, Ryan Pressly, Will Smith, because he's a lefty, even though you're like not thrilled with him, and Ryan Stanek. Those guys definitively in. I would say like 90% in. Hunter Brown, based off of what we have seen thus far, Rafael Montero, the other. So really the question is between Hector Neris, Phil Maton, and Brian Abreu, who's the one that's going to get, well, old Yellard? Who's the one that's not going to be with them for the playoffs? Personally, and this is entirely just based off of the fact that I watched him in Seattle, I feel like it's Rafael Montero. But it's not going to be Rafael Montero. I think he's going to make it. It's got to be between Brian Abreu, who made things way too close last night. Bases loaded in the ninth inning. You had to bring in Ryan Pressly for work. Come on. Don't make him do that. Maybe he's hungover after the celebration that took place on Monday night after the Astros won the American League West. Is Hector Neris? Can you do that to Hector Neris after how happy he seemed in the clubhouse? I don't know. I mean, as a texter said a little bit earlier, Dusty Baker's feelings and loyalty maybe gets in the way. He was so emotional in the clubhouse and was constantly talked about over the course of last night's broadcast. Can you do that to Hector? No, that wouldn't be nice. And then you have Phil Maton, who has just not been very good this year. I think it's between Maton and Abreu. And legitimately, those are your two weakest links. And you could easily have one of those two, if not both. If you really want to get ballsy, you could put both on. But one of those two is not going to be with the Astros for the postseason. Their pitching is amazing. But what is the weakest link on this team? What is the weakest link? Flimsy Cherry, twitch.tv/ESPN975 says Will Smith and Phil Maton could buy. I don't know because Will's a lefty. I feel like you got to have at least one lefty coming out of the pen. Todd the Show says zero chance it's Neris. I doubt it's him. I honestly feel like Abreu might have just killed himself last night with that performance. That's not good.
It was a bad day for Brian Abreu to have a bad day.
Yeah.
Especially with us doing the segment.
Exactly. That's the biggest problem that he had. We were thinking up this segment, and I was just looking for somebody that would be easy. And I was like, okay, as someone who doesn't watch the Astros as hardcore as some do, I'm just going to say the guy that sucked the most last night is the guy. Bam, fired.
You're like a lion, like looking at a bunch of gazelles, and one was just coming up a little bit limping. And so, yep.
Yes.
Brian Abreu was that gazelle.
I don't do the Russell Wilson kind of film watching. I just watch one guy and I'm like, oh yeah, that guy sucked. Okay, bye.
Kyler Murray style.
Yeah, exactly. I got to go back to playing Call of Duty. It's double experience points day before the beta comes out, I think.
I don't know.
You can play in third person now. Come on, Sean. Call of Duty, Modern Warfare 2. It's not going to be the exact same game as the game before. One of the things you learn with video game franchises that release every other year is like, oh yeah, it's the same game. Give me all your money! Excuse me. Wait a second. Let me give you all my money? I'm not sure how that works. We need more coffee. 713-780-3776 is how you call in. You can text in too. 713-780-3776. Flimsy Cherry says, I'd rather not have a lefty if you can't trust that lefty. But you do have to have the lefty, right? Like, you have to. That's what all the seam heads will tell you. Come on, man. You got to have a lefty. I don't know why, but if you don't have a righty who is going to kick lefty's ass, and isn't Maton supposed to be capable of doing that, but it hasn't been the case this year? If Maton's not the guy, then it's got to be Will Harris. You got to have somebody out there. But that might be their biggest issue. The good thing is they have so many guys that can go deep into games, but maybe left-handed batters are going to do the Astros in ultimately. We shall, of course, see. But what is the biggest weakness for the Houston Astros? 713-780-3776 is how you call. It's also how you text in. You can tweet me at Gallant Says, twitch.tv/ESPN975. Vanessa will be back tomorrow. Coming up next, we'll keep this conversation on the table. Plus, we check in with the neighbors, the Dallas Cowboys. What's going on down there at running back? Are they really going to make it Ezekiel Elliott's team the way that Jerry Jones implied all season, all offseason going into it? And if you got a wine, 713-780-3776. It's Wine Wednesday. We'll talk about all that next. Don't go anywhere. The most interactive sports talk show in Houston.
ESPN 97.5. Let's check in on our football neighbors with Vanessa and Gallant.
It's a beautiful day in this neighborhood, a beautiful day for a neighbor. Would you be mine? Could you be mine? It's a neighborly day.
The Dallas Cowboys somehow beat the Cincinnati Bengals on Sunday. Still trying to figure out how that happened. Do I blame Joe Burrow for holding on to the football too long? Do I blame the Bengals offensive line that doesn't come together? Do I blame Zach Taylor? Or do I just give the Cowboys credit for winning a game with Cooper Rush under center? Whatever the case, I talked to enough Cowboy fan friends, discouraged, bitter, depressed Cowboy fan friends who are tired of Mike McCarthy already, don't feel like the team is necessarily getting better, even with a win over a Cincinnati team. You know, you jump out to the 14-3 lead. You're able to hang on largely due to the fact that Cincinnati just can't protect Joe Burrow. At least there's only five penalties for 45 yards in the game. As the season continues for Dallas, I think that they're going to have to figure out a problem that I'm not sure Mike McCarthy is allowed to have the answer to. I long have thought Ezekiel Elliott is a quality running back. But over the last year or so, if you've talked to any Dallas Cowboys fan, they will say that if you watch the games, there is a noticeable difference between the kind of burst that Ezekiel Elliott has and that Tony Pollard has. Thus far in the year, Zeke has 25 carries for 105 yards. Tony Pollard has 15 carries for 51 yards, but one of them looked significantly better than the other. Sunday against Cincy. Ezekiel Elliott was on Get Up on ESPN and asked about the difference between him and Tony Pollard.
I think we have different running styles. I'm more of a bruiser. He definitely could do that too. But he's a fast guy. He's a guy that anytime he touches the rock, he might go score a touchdown. So I think our running styles complement each other, and I think it's definitely tough on those opposing defenses.
Do you want a bruiser in 2022? I ask that because I'm watching one in Derrick Henry look like a shell of himself in Tennessee. Obviously, he's had some injuries over the last couple of years. If you're Cooper Rush and the Dallas Cowboys, don't you want to have somebody out there who's got big play potential more often than not?
Also, I'm old enough to remember when Zeke Elliott did have big play potential and wasn't a bruiser.
Yeah.
I feel like that a choice was made down the line where he became a bruiser.
He always had a little physicality to him that I thought was elite. And I thought that some of the things that he was able to do in the open field, yes, a couple of years ago, were really impressive. Hurdling people, and he always looked like somebody that would hurt to tackle. But now when you're that grinded out 3.5 yards to carry option, like, does that give your team the best chance to win if he's getting the majority of the carries? I said before that I'm not sure Mike McCarthy has the ability to make a change here. It's because of what Ezekiel Elliott's getting paid. Over the course of the offseason, Jerry Jones consistently was saying that, yeah, I want to see Ezekiel Elliott get the lion's share of the work for the running game. He was asked about this in a recent press conference. Are the running back carries split where you would like? Would you like to see more of a balance or more heavy towards Ezekiel Elliott? Jones said, I want to make sure that we give Zeke the load that the team deserves to have from him. Doesn't that take away from your obvious out there with Pollard? Make those big plays. You can make those big plays. You can see his juice. You can see the zip that he adds to the offense. We've just got to do both. Just got to take advantage of the fact that we've got both these guys that can really give the defense heck. So I'd like to see continued use of it. And to answer your question, I'd like to see both used 20% more. Why not just give one of the guys 20% more of the carries? It seems like you need more Pollard out there. And if you want to use Ezekiel Elliott in short yardage situations, fine. But it's bizarre to me the way that they're operating things. And it really doesn't feel like Mike McCarthy has a whole lot of power. It's Vanessa and Gallant. No Vanessa. She'll be back tomorrow. I'm Paul Gallant. 713-780-3776. 713-780-ESPN is how you call in. I do want to touch on a couple of the weakest link for the Houston Astros takes that you guys have delivered on that text line. You can also send it on Twitch. Someone is sending a bunch of pictures of hot dogs. I'm really wondering why on the text line. This is hot dogs. Hot dog, hot dog, hot dog, hot dog. I guess you found out today that you could send pictures of Betty White holding a hot dog, pictures of Olivia Munn with hot dogs in her mouth, pictures of Gary Busey surfing on a hot dog. This could be a disaster for the text line in the near future. In fact, this might have ruined it forever. The most interactive sports talk show in Houston is now the most hot dog-laden show in Houston. My take on hot dogs, severely overrated, kind of tastes like trash, really depends on who cooks them.
Also, there's probably, this might be disrespectful or mean-spirited, but I think there's definitely one show in the city of Houston that consumes more hot dogs than our show. At least one. Come on. I'm just playing the odds. We're probably not the most hot dog laden show.
Oh, definitely not. Definitely not. Which is the most hot dog laden show at ESPN 97.5 and 92.5? Sean Mapes behind the glass. I'm putting you on the spot for that.
I would like to plead the fifth.
Okay.
But I would look later in the day.
Later in the day?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Jeremy, big hot dog guy, huh?
Nah. Well, although, Joel is from Wisconsin. Although, that's more brats than
hot
dogs. And I might have just gotten in more hot water than I meant to.
No.
I just plead the fifth. I should stop talking.
They just eat cheese. Like, that's all they do. Joel, noted cheese eater, a big farter, you know? Like, that's what happens when you eat a lot of cheese. But, you know, I think I know where you're going here. And you pleading the fifth, you know? It's just disappointing. That's all.
It's my constitutional right.
It is your constitutional right. That is true. But I am the law. So how about that? All right. It's time for Wine Wednesday. If you go to wine, 713-780-3776, 713-780-ESPN. You can also tweet me too. @Gallant says, you got something to bitch about? Hit it.
It's Wine Wednesday.
It's the Wine and Cheese Club, gorgeous, where we all get together and vent about what annoys us at work.
On Vanessa and Gallant.
What's your Wednesday wine?
Wine.
First off, Google can kiss my ass. Google, how do you fall apart ever? Whenever technology fails me or us, it drives me crazy. Technology should never fail. I know. It's bound to fail. It's human. It's human-created machinations. But Google being down before the start of a show, absolutely preposterous. Now, if it's before the Killer Bees or it's before the Wheelhouse or it's before the Bench, I don't give a tootie patootie. But when it's for me, outrageous. Google, I'm hunting you down.
We could have timed it a little bit better, Google. That's all we're saying.
Exactly. Who's in charge of Google?
I used to know.
Mark Zuckerberg? Does he own it? Seems like he would own it by this point. Feels like Google lost the arms race. It feels like Amazon lapped them. Tesla lapped them.
I just realized how hard this is going to be to look up with Google down.
Ooh. See? Maybe this is, there's a coup taking place right now in Google. One Google man is taking out another Google man. But here's my real wine. Okay, so I'm a bit of a klutz. Last night, I was washing my coffee carafe. I put it down in the spot where it's supposed to dry. Somehow, this thing barrel rolled off of my counter and onto the floor and shattered into a million pieces. After yelling about 15 obscenities, I thought to myself, damn it, now I got to go out and get a new one. I got to get a replacement carafe. I figure the grocery store right around the corner has one. It does not. So I drive all the way to a Walmart. It's late at night at Walmart. A little more packed than you would expect. Find the coffee carafe. I get to the checkout line. The self-checkout line. It is so long. And you know why it's so long? Because a lot of you people out there don't know how to do self-checkout. I get it. I'm one of the greatest grocery store cashiers and baggers of all time. An absolute legend. Check my times. They were impressive. But can we get less of the person scratching their butt, looking down at their phone when they have two items to check out? Like, do you have any purpose in life? Do you not have anywhere to go? How are you slow? Why are you taking this long? You have two items. The UPC code is right there. Get it over the scanner, then do it again. Pull out your credit card and pay. And some of these people, it would be one thing if they were up there in age. I would actually give people an excuse for that, for taking their time. When you are younger than me and you cannot figure out how to do this, I feel like I should get to cut you and do it myself. I'm always in, I'm always out. In fact, I should be able to use the self-checkout whenever I want, even if I have 20 items or less. I am a grocery store veteran. Thank you for my service. It is outrageous that I had to wait that long. All in all, 1 hour to replace that stupid coffee carafe, and I'm mad about it. Sean?
Do you do the thing where if you have multiples of one item, like if you bought like three shampoos at the same time, you just do the same shampoo, you scan it three times?
You can't anymore. You have to put it down so that it weighs down at the self-checkout. And I think a lot of people don't understand that either. And then they'll get mad, and then they'll ask for someone to come over and help them. And it's like, no, like this is pretty easy stuff. It's standard. We should all be able to self-checkout on our own. But this line, it took 15 minutes to get through the line. And none of the other lines were opening up because the people that were working the cash registers were very slow. I got to say, step your game up. I know. I'm a Hall of Famer cashier slash bagger. but
jersey
like
in the rafters.
Yeah, yeah, Sean. Sean, I'm the James Harden of cashiers. You know,
where was most of your great cashiering done?
Hannaford's grocery store up in North Quincy, Massachusetts, where I often had to separate angry older Irish people from Asian folks who did not know how to speak English, because they would constantly get into conflicts about very random, stupid things.
Sorry, Mark Wahlberg, was that your
jeez, thank God he wasn't.
Grocery store a lot.
Yeah, there would have been assault. That would not have been fun. One of the things that I used to have to do was disarm people that would hit the bottle machines, because you have recycled bottle machines. You get 5 cents for every single bottle that you put in or can that you put in. And there would be these two ladies that would roam around the neighborhood and just go in people's front yard and take it. And then they would like make like $80 a day by coming in and taking all this. I respected their hustle, but they would constantly beat the bottle machines with sticks. So I would have to go up to them and say, no, you can't do that, and take the sticks out of their hand. Like, I had to disarm them. And I always did it politely, but it was like an everyday thing. It was like, no, I will take care of it. Just give me the stick. Stop hitting the machine with the stick. We're all over the place on this Wine Wednesday. Sean, do you have a wine?
Google, Bing Down.
Yes.
Makes it almost impossible to do a radio show, turns out.
It does.
Especially if some stuff you're just planning to play off YouTube. Well,
yeah.
YouTube's down.
Should we write out?
We should break up Google.
That's true. And we don't have printers at work here, so we couldn't print off the rundown either.
Yes.
Should we hand write out the rundown?
I would kill myself.
Yeah, I could not do that. Sean, you wouldn't be able to read what I write either. I have terrible penmanship.
I don't think any of us would be able to write or read what any of us wrote. Maybe Vanessa. Vanessa probably has good handwriting.
Vanessa does have very good handwriting. It's like annoying how good it's very classic women. They always have the best handwriting.
I can either have nice handwriting or write like decently fast.
Okay.
Like I have to really take my time. But if I'm like taking notes or something, it's just garbage.
It's turned to garbage. I used to write perfect cursive, and then in the middle of a test that I was taking once, I stopped writing in cursive.
Got the yips?
It was just in eighth grade. It wasn't the yips. It was just, this is stupid. Why am I writing in cursive?
Oh, yeah.
It takes forever to write. So I changed my writing in the middle of the test, and my teacher brought me in after class and was like, are you cheating?
Oh, yeah, because it looks like two different handwriting.
And I said, like, no, I said, I have retired from cursive.
Jersey in the rafters?
What's ironic is I cheated on the test before.
Uh-huh.
Sorry, Mr. Robarts. I still feel bad about that. It's the one time I ever did.
Uh-huh. The one
time. It's the one time. The one time I ever did. I was dropping my pen on the floor and looking at notes. I can't believe they didn't notice it. Like, honestly, I should have been expelled from that school for that one. Oh, well. I'm Paul Gallant. It's Vanessa and Gallant. Sean Mapes behind the glass. If you got any wines, we'll get to them on the other side. Plus, coming up next, this is the question that should break your brain. Seems very obvious that you'd rather be a Bears fan than a Houston Texans fan, right? As we get ready for the Texans and the Bears coming up on Sunday. Not so fast, my friend. You'll find out why next.
Warning, warning. You're listening to ESPN 97.5. You're back with Vanessa and Gallant on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 from the Veritex Community Bank Studios. Here's Vanessa Richardson and Paul Gallant.
It hurts more in the locker room than the Bears fans. I mean, because at the end of the day, they're not putting in any work. I see the guys in the locker room every day. I see how much work they put in. So just coming out with a disappointing loss like this, it hurts. But we just got to respond.
That was Bears quarterback Justin Fields after his Bears lost in rather embarrassing fashion to the Green Bay Packers in Sunday Night Football. I heard that comment and thought to myself, you know, Fields is wrong here. Not in that his team isn't doing more than the average fan to win a game. They are. It's football, right? He's wrong in that the Bears have had a remarkably bad history for being a team that is such a part of the fabric of the NFL. Like, they've really been a depressing franchise, especially of late. Off the top of your head, Sean Mapes, can you name a good Chicago Bears quarterback not named Jay Cutler, Jim McMahon, or Sid Luckman? who I'm sure you don't even know who the last person is.
I would not have named Sid Luckman, so good. Thank you for taking him off the Family Feud board. Caleb Haney for like a half against the Bears or against the Packers.
Kyle Orton that one time.
Oh, Josh McCown that one year with Brandon Marshall.
You're talking about the entire Lovie Smith era, by the way, with listing all of those quarterback names.
Quarterback whisperer.
Seriously. Like, that's where we're at.
I know Jim Harbaugh was a Bears quarterback.
Captain
based
comeback.
Based off of NFL Blitz 99.
He had a couple of good years with the Indianapolis Colts as well. I think that was before his time in Chicago. What's worse, to be a Texans fan or a Bears fan? And look, there are some cool perks to being a Chicago Bears fan. You have won a Super Bowl. You have been to a somewhat recent Super Bowl back in 2006, 2007, where they lost to the Indianapolis Colts. And you can claim a bunch of championships. 1921, 1932, 33, 1940, 1941, 1943, 1946.
Dynasty.
Pretty good.
Also, wait, a lot of those in the 40s, I feel like, should come with an asterisk.
We're the Chicago Bears trying to win World War II, seeing as they won the championship in 1941, 1942, they lost it in 1943. Good question. Are they Americans?
Were their heads in the right spot?
I don't think they were.
It seemed like a lot of able-bodied men playing for the Chicago Bears, not on the front lines.
It sounds very accurate. You would think that a football player on the front lines, you know, give me a Dick Butkus or one of the other many Bears that have played there over the years.
Sid Luckman.
Yeah, Sid Luckman. Come on. Give me one of those guys. Guess how many times the Bears have made the playoffs since 1950?
1950?
Since 1950.
How many times they've made the play? Like,
and I want to know how you feel about this. I think this is a lot tougher
than
you would expect.
That's like 70 years, right?
It's 70...
2 years. Or 71.
71, 72, something like that.
It's got to be like at least like 25. 20?
20 on the dot.
Oh, my God.
I mean, you're one of the most historic franchises in football. And you have, and you take away essentially 1977 through 1991, where they made the playoffs 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 times. I mean, we're talking almost 75 years of large-scale futility. It's amazing. I thought for sure that there would be some better years in the 50s, in the 60s. So look, Justin Fields is young. He doesn't know about this. I'm not going to get mad at him for being defensive, but Bears fans have had it worse. And sure, there are some perks to being a Bears fan. I mean, I know a lot of people don't like Clay Walker's football time in Houston. I personally find them to be tasteless, barbaric. But that's fine, you know, to each their own. But the Bears do have this fight song. So at the very least, like, this is one of the things that is in your favor.
Bear down, Chicago Bears.
Right?
Every play clear the way to victory.
Yeah. Bear down, Chicago Bears. See, you have this going for you. Never forget the way you thrill the nation, except for in primetime games.
Born in the 40s.
Yes. In the 1940s, draft dodging. Bear down, Chicago Bears. We thought the Packers were worse than Hitler. There you go. So you have that going for you. You have the Super Bowl shuffle. Like, there are some cool moments in Bears history. But where you're at right now, who would you rather have at quarterback? And I'm saying this even as someone who doesn't believe in Davis Mills. Would you rather have Justin Fields, who just threw, to this point, 2 weeks into the year, 28 passes thus far. Would you rather have Fields or Davis Mills? I'm kind of torn. I was always a little skeptical of Fields coming out of Ohio State, mainly because he was coming out of Ohio State. I would rather have a guy who can run than a guy who can't, but I don't know if Fields is good at throwing the ball. He also doesn't have any weapons. His situation isn't great. At least he can run. Like, that's what you have up on Texans fans. The quarterback can run. But what else? I mean, honestly, the Texans defense has been more impressive through the first couple of weeks of the year. Damian Pierce and Brandon Cooks are more exciting than whoever they have. What, Dave Montgomery? I mean, they're running the damn wishbone out there. So I don't know what's going to happen on Sunday. I'm not going to act like I'm enthusiastic about a possible Texans victory. All I'm saying is this is one of the rare franchises that you're playing where it might be more miserable to be a fan of that team than the Texans. And we got to take our victories where we can get them.
Also, we haven't even mentioned NRG versus Soldier Field.
Soldier Field looks like a space shuttle crashed into it.
It looks like the field, like they have the rodeo there just on the field. Like they just like NRG, at least, you know, they have the rodeo, but then also the field's nice.
Yeah.
And they host Super Bowls.
That's true. Soldier Field, terrible grass. There's an old, cool, archaic building that has had sex with the space shuttle, and it doesn't match at all. It looks weird. They're still trying to figure out what they're doing there. I think it is, if you got a gun to my head, would I rather be a fan of a new team that's clearly the replacement of my wife who left me, the Houston Oilers, as I wear a Houston Oilers shirt today, or would I rather be a fan of a team that has been pretty damn awful for the last 70 years, that had its best run during a world war? I think the answer, if I'm being honest here, is rooting for the team that at the very least hasn't been disappointing me for that long. You know, making the playoffs, let's add it all up. Because look, this is a playoff team. Making the playoffs 6 times in 20 years or 20 times in 70 years. What would you rather have? Honestly, it's about the same.
Yeah,
percentage-wise.
I was trying to do the math, and it's closer than it like feels, but it is also like 20 times in 70 years is depressing.
This is the one time you guys can talk trash. This is it. This is the week. Talk that trash. I'm Paul Gallant. Sean Mapes behind the glass. 713-780-3776. You can tweet me at Gallant says we've got garbage time coming up next. And plus, how does baseball continue to have the funniest injuries ever? You'll hear another one next.
Years of research and innovation.
Innovation Map is the new voice of innovation in Houston.
Pretty cool, huh, Morty?
Covering startups, tech, energy, health, social impact, and more. Visit innovationmap.com today.
Do it now! Do it! Do it! Do it now!
Breaking down the Houston sports scene with V and Pauly G on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
This is from a couple of days ago. It's one of the more classic baseball injuries you'll see. This just came to my attention yesterday, and it might have to do with the fact that, you know, the Oakland A's are the Oakland A's, but they did play the Astros a little bit ago. James Caprillion was scratched from a start against the Chicago White Sox with a right middle finger laceration suffered while he extended his arms out while putting on his shirt and hitting a poster on his wall. That does not seem possible.
It sounds like he lied, like, and just made it up on the spot. Like, he was just like, yeah, I sliced my finger on a poster on my wall. And they're like, what? Yeah, I was putting on a shirt and I hit the poster and it lacerated my finger.
Sounds like Mad Libs if he's going about it that way.
Because it's two excuses on one.
Fill in the blanks.
I was putting on a shirt and that's why I got it. And then I cut it on a poster. It's like, what are we talking about?
And the reason I did it, because when I was taking off my shirt, my cat was rubbing against my leg and I lost my balance and then my hand hit the poster.
Is a Mr. Magoo type scenario.
You're a baseball player. Get a frame for your poster. What is this, college?
I was trying to figure out, was it a poster or a, you know, frameless poster? Or did he cut himself on the frame somehow? Both are completely... no one has ever cut themselves on either of those objects.
Yeah. I mean, it has to be a framed picture I could buy. Framed poster I could buy. This is a paper cut. Is it not?
Yeah, and for it to be bad enough to, like, pop up on maybe not the injured list, but to be, like, scratched from a start, that seems pretty serious.
Very serious. Very, very serious. I mean, I imagine it was, like, a pretty thick cut. Yeah, like, that's why if it was a poster, it would make sense because it probably was some glass or something involved.
So MLB.com has revisiting the MLB's strangest injuries, which... A, is hilarious that it's on MLB.com. Like, from the league itself, here are some of the most ridiculous ones. There are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 from 2022.
Ooh! Okay, let's...
There's 6 from this year.
Let's go through them really quickly.
Okay, well...
I know we've talked about a couple of them already today. So I'm sure... Excuse me, already on this show this year. And we've definitely talked about some old ones, too. Because it's always a baseball injury. Like, Trevor Bauer injured while flying his drone.
Well, we talked about Aroldis Chapman a few weeks ago, or actually last month.
Hate to see it.
Yeah, couldn't have happened to a better guy. Leg infection stemming from a tattoo. That's not, like, an excuse, like, where I think he's lying, but that's definitely,
that's believable.
Like, yeah, and it's also, like, what? Chris Sale, also from 2022. Not motorcycle accident, bicycle accident.
Bicycle accident, right.
Yes.
And right.
So he missed, he missed the rest of the year.
You hate to see a bicyclist
after
get in
coming
an accident.
Back from injury.
You really hate to see that.
Archie Bradley got hurt in a wild brawl where he suffered a right elbow fracture after he fell over a dugout railing on his way to the scrum. He didn't get hurt in the scrum. He got hurt on the way to the scrum.
Man, he's going over the top, and he dies before he even gets out there.
As I was reading that, I was like, okay, at least he got hurt in a fight. Nope, he got hurt on the way to the fight.
That's some real depressing, hey, I thought it was going to charge in World War I, I'm gone in 5 seconds kind of move.
Wow, and maybe I should play for the Chicago Bears now. Yeah. While recovering from oblique strain, Max Scherzer was bitten on his right hand, his throwing hand, at home by one of his dogs. While he was injured, he got bit by a dog.
That makes sense. I mean, listen, some people have bad dogs. Some people don't train their dogs very well. DJ Swearinger. His dog bit Jadeveon Clowney once. People forget.
Yeah, yeah.
What else we got?
And then this is the last one from this year. Jonathan Villar of the Chicago Cubs hit himself in the mouth with an exercise band and causing damage that required, quote, significant dental work.
Damn, so he must have taken his teeth out.
He must have used, like, those, you know, rubber
bands. Yeah, they're
bands.
Powerful.
And it had to have been, the handles of them, like, chipped a tooth or something.
The way that you're pantomiming it, yes. I totally could see that happening. Ow, God, that would suck.
Devin Williams for the Chicago Brewers broke his hand after clinching the National League Central last year.
Nice.
In the celebration, he broke his hand.
How did he break it? What did he
Williams
do?
Told reporters that he had too much to drink and got upset about something on the ride home and punched a wall.
Well, guess what? The Astros won the AL West. No one punched a wall.
Yeah.
How about that?
Injury-free in their celebration.
Not hungover either. How about that?
Yeah, hungover enough to beat the Tampa Bay Rays. It also, Tropicana Field has to be the worst place to be if you have a hangover. It seems so bright in there. It seems like very harsh fluorescent lighting.
It is weird, yeah, because of the roof. The roof is so white. All right, that's going to wrap up our sports conversation for today, unless we have more to get to in garbage time.
Oh, I love trash.
Garbage time.
It's garbage.
Starts now.
I'm the trash man.
This is garbage.
This is embarrassing. Remember that last touchdown pass that Tom Brady threw to Mike Evans? The Bucs, they come back from 27-3. You're thinking to yourself, man, the Rams are going to blow this. And someone bought it at an auction for $500,000, but was able to weasel his way out of it because it wasn't actually Tom Brady's last ever touchdown pass. Some loser bought this for $129,658. And you know what? I say loser, but this person clearly just has a few money and I'm jealous of him. Like, I've gone like back and forth on this. But why would you want this football? A football from a playoff loss by Tom Brady that wasn't actually his last touchdown pass.
Could be his last playoff loss ever.
True, if they don't make the playoffs, they are 2-0.
Or win the Super Bowl.
And they just beat the Saints. Yeah, it's weird. I mean, I could see this going for maybe 10 grand or something like that. Maybe. Or if it's like a charity auction, maybe it escalates like that. But this seems like a very large waste of money. Like, this is not a special football.
This, like, art buys of, like, bananas on the wall or, like, a blank canvas or something, I think it's money laundering.
Ooh.
I think he's laundering money. I think, what's his name? Or there's no name on this. I think he is laundering money.
Okay.
I was going to
actually stay anonymous.
Slander him.
He got to stay anonymous.
Yeah.
Yeah, you don't want to, you got to watch out. Remember, we got that letter from the Knights of Columbus. We got to be a little careful on this going forward when it comes to mafia accusations, if you will. By the way, Tom Brady is now officially the oldest active Big Four athlete in North America after Zdeno Chara, a hockey player that played for the Bruins for a long time. He's like 6'9", retired. I have no idea how you can skate at 6'9". Seems like an absolute disaster waiting to happen.
And use a, like, he has to bend over basically for his job to slap the puck.
It must be the biggest stick that we've ever seen. But I don't know if it's as big as John Hamm's stick. John Hamm, famous actor, has had a couple of photos of him go viral for, let's just say, packing heat. Howard Stern asked him about this, and John Hamm was a little defensive talking about the old Johnson.
Did they tell you on Mad Men you must wear underwear that your penis is so large that it is, in fact, interfering with the performance and it's showing up in your suit?
I have worn underwear every single day of my life, Howard. That is
so that's a rumor. That, in other words, none of that is
yes,
true.
Yes. First of all, who doesn't wear underwear? I wear underwear.
Especially with a
underwear
suit.
Every day of my life. With a suit?
I mean,
no, come on.
He's so embarrassed there. I guess you have to act embarrassed when people are talking about your third leg. Good for John Hamm. Star of Mad Men. Successful television show. And apparently a man who's got quite a bit of lumber.
He went really hard in the paint denying the not wearing underwear accusation.
I guess there's been a bunch of pictures that you can actually see the outline or something like that. And when you don't wear undies, I guess it's a little bit more visible. Who would have thought?
Must be a nice problem to have.
It must be a nice problem to have indeed. Up next, the Killer Bees. That was Sean Mapes behind the glass. Big thanks to him. Big thanks to everyone who contributed. Vanessa will be back tomorrow. I am merely Paul Gallant. So long. Farewell. Killer Bees are up next.
ESPN 97.5.